Welcome to Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated G for general audience.
Sonic Speaks.
Hello and welcome to Sonic Speaks, where we talk to the makers and shapers of modern audio drama. I'm Jack Ward, your host, and today we have some guests from an incredible team of writers, producers, and actors. Reimagined Radio began in 2013 by John F. Barber as a creative project to engage community voice artists, musicians, sound artists, and engineers in creative research and performance. Reimagine Radio produces and shares sound-based storytelling from the literary to the mass appeal, from old-time radio recreations to contemporary audio drama. It is my pleasure to speak with my guests today from Reimagine Radio, Mr. John Barber and Mr. Mark Rose. Hello, gentlemen. I can't tell you how much I've looked forward to this.
Hello, Jack, and thank you for having us. It's very exciting to be here.
This is John Barber,
by the way.
What a find to be able to discover you guys. It's like, you know, I mine audio drama all the time, and then I discovered you, and I feel both ashamed that it's taken me so long and thrilled to find like-minded individuals who've been at it as long as you have. John, you began back in 2013 with War of the Worlds. At least that's the earliest show available on the site. And you just finished a remake and a relook at that story. Is there something unique? And by the way, you wrote stuff about it in some of your research books. Is there something unique about that tale, War of the Worlds, that strikes your imagination?
Well, I think it's certainly an example of a classic radio drama. And it's certainly the most infamous radio broadcast ever. I had found it easy to use in classes, university classes, talking about radio production, radio drama, because the narrative is just so compelling and exciting. I don't know. I don't think I ever harbored a hope that aliens would invade Earth or, you know, anything like that. But it just it seemed to me to be a well-organized story. It captured your attention immediately upon first hearing. It moved quite along, at least for the first half. I always felt the second half was rather dull and boring compared to the first half. And so that was something that we addressed in our most recent reimagined version of the drama. And frankly, I think also the students enjoyed it. They had heard of the War of the Worlds, but never really listened to it, never talked about it, never analyzed, what was happening in the storytelling. So it was quite a nice thing to use in digital storytelling classes or audio storytelling classes.
And it startles me that the version they did in Mexico ended up in the destruction of the radio station. I forget exactly which city that happened in, but that just shows the power of story in multiple language, whether it's English or in Spanish for that reason. So what compelled you, John, and I want to get to Mark as well on this in a moment, but what compelled you to start this whole project of Reimagine Radio back in 2013? What made you think of doing this?
That's a great question, Jack, because it allows me to give credit where credit is due, and that is to my students at university. The project was for students in the process of learning audio editing to take the 1 hour broadcast of the War of the Worlds and turn it into something that was less than 10 minutes. And that would be their audio story. And then they were to take those 10 minutes that they had selected and create something of their own, a backstory, a prequel or a sequel, a continuation or, you know, previous beginning, whatever they were most interested in. Students were working on various projects, and one day a great question bubbled up from one student. Dr. Barber, what happens when people don't know the story of the War of the Worlds. How are they really going to appreciate the work that we're doing here if they can't see our project in context of the larger original audio drama? So I said, okay, you got me. You know, we need to expand our project. So I very quickly contacted the Willamette Radio Workshop. And this is how I had previously met Mark in a production of theirs, and asked if they might be interested to give a performance of the War of the Worlds, a public performance, as a way of opening the student sound art exhibition that I was planning in a gallery space in downtown Vancouver, Washington. The answer was yes, if I would arrange the space. So I found space availability at our local historic movie theater, built in 1936, 2 years before the War of the Worlds broadcast, single screen, classic, movie theater. The owner and the manager said, sure, I don't have anything planned, but you have to take care of all the promotion. So I ended up, becoming a promoter and an arranger and an actual physical producer of a live performance that ended up quite serendipitously. The date was October 30th, and this was the 70th anniversary of the original broadcast. And we were very lucky. We filled the movie theater to standing room only, and people were in the lobby outside listening through the curtains into the auditorium portion of the theater. We also identified some people in the audience who remembered hearing the original broadcast. So we were able to bring them up on stage and, just as a prequel to the performance, ask them to talk about, what do you remember? What about it? And then the performance itself, the Willamette Radio Workshop, did a great job. And after it was all over, we looked at each other and said, hey, this was really fun. Let's do this again. So that got Reimagined Radio started as a continually evolving live performance group. And Mark was involved in some of those early productions of augmenting the sound and helping us out in post-production work. So that's sorry to be so long and detailed about it, but it's a fascinating story, the origin story of Reimagined Radio.
I'm so jealous. I wish I was there. I wish you had taken recording of the whole experience, including the people who came up to talk. That would be really cool to listen to. Mark.
But it was all we could do to think of how to put together a live performance of a classic radio drama and make it seem as if the audience was actually in the radio studio theater, listening to the live broadcast. That was the contextual framework behind the whole performance and each live performance that followed from then on.
I want to talk more about your process when it comes to pre, post, and all that kind of production, to do the difference between a live and a studio project. But I want to get first to Mark, because I don't want to leave him waiting. Mark, you pointed out earlier we had cross paths so many years ago in the earliest years of the Sonic Society. Tell me about your relationship with radio drama. What's that been like through the years?
Well, it's been very, very tumultuous relationship. With a radio program called Dry Smoke and Whispers Radio Theater back in 1980. And it was the first thing that my associate and I had ever done in terms of certainly broadcast. I found this little fledgling, community radio station out there in the wilds of Tampa, who decided to take a risk and air this thing that we had proposed to them about a telekinetic special detective in another galaxy, in another dimension, which in 1980 didn't have really well. That was it. So we got that. I quickly went into post-production mode years after, years after that show was started, and that became a career for me, not just a a fun thing to do with characters and stuff. So that kind of became what I do now. But I have never loving this kind of work, and have always done it in some
the way
to do it. My colleague in our newest radio program called Fusebox, we joke all the time. I created that therapy for myself, because in most cases in the work I do, I'm not challenged the same way that I might challenge myself, or that shows like that challenge. So I create Chops Up, and we're going to be starting our eighth year of that that program
in January.
So who'd have thunk it? But yeah, always been involved in audio theater and radio drama, and always,
So did you, I have so many questions, but that's Fusebox, thefuseboxshow.com for anybody who's interested. The website is there. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what the Fusebox show is, but I want to tell you, it's not, I don't have it within hand here, but I still have my CDs of Dry Smoke and Whispers. I think it's three of them in a case. It's one of my special prizes. Would love to have those on Mutual at some point. Would love to be able to replay those. I think they would be a joy to do so.
And we can happen.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be awesome to have those
CD
air again.
Yeah, back on Wednesday Wonders. So tell me about the Fusebox show.
Well, that is a that's a very, in the sense that it's mostly a commentary type of thing that we supplement with either comedic bits, spoken word material. Sometimes it's serious, but most of the time it's absurd, and it's just a very fun. And we have done interviews on that show. We one of my favorites was to the Ed Wood estate. Everybody knows who Ed Wood is, filmmaker of long ago plant. All that stuff. Well, Bob is a friend of mine. He used to work at a radio station in Los Angeles, and he he became the heir apparent to the Ed Wood fortune because he knew Kathy widow, and managed to get money because Kathy didn't know that they were making a movie about her husband, because they never talked to her. So he put the Clear Channel people on that, and they got her some bucks.
Good stuff.
Fast friends ever since. But yeah, so we've done interviews. Part it's a very lively half hour of some talk and some fun comedy bits and a lot of spoken word. So
I love the subtitle for it, the show for everybody, but not everybody will like it. That's awesome. That's a fantastic.
It's really true.
Subtitle to work from. John, what are some of your earliest memories of radio drama? You were a professor. I'm assuming this is in the theater department that you were working from.
Actually, I convene with the faculty of the Creative Media and Digital Culture program at Washington State University, Vancouver. It's totally separate from the theater department, but there's certainly the opportunity to take features and affordances of digital technology and jump in any direction. And I've been fortunate to be able to pursue what I call a creative research or practice-based research focus, as I've moved through my years in the academy. And fortunately, the university seems to support what I'm doing to follow my interest in radio drama, especially since I cast it as a community facing project and have often incorporated community and the university in some of the productions, some of the episodes.
I noticed that, and in doing the research for this, I'm doing my master's right now in English as a second language, and I'm fascinated with if there's evidence to demonstrate that good old audio drama could be an effective tool to help people learn English as a second language. I'm reminded of things like Life with Luigi as a comedic show back from old-time radio drama. And I've noticed that you spend a lot of time sort of doing some identifications between oral storytelling and radio drama. Do you think there are some pretty hard lines as to the various different types of stories that you can tell through sound?
My initial response is just to say no, because sound is such a powerful medium and works directly with the brain to engage our imaginations. So even acousmatic listening situations where the source of the sound is unknown or at the very least unfamiliar, we still can make a connection. We humans can still make a connection with that sound based on our previous listening experience and repertoire of identified sounds that, you know, we've experienced in our lives. I think it's a really interesting idea, though, just to kind of pivot for a moment back to you, your use of radio drama to teach ESL is very fascinating. When doing my graduate work, I also spent some time in the ESL field, and the sort of my mantra was, you're going to learn a new language when you start dreaming in that target language. And radio drama could really help because it's so immediate, so connective, so engaging, much more so than the exercises where you just speak into a microphone and listen to your bad pronunciation in your own headphones. I mean, how's that, make you feel about reaching a target language? Probably not so great, but being able to understand what's happening in a story that speaks to something about the culture that wraps up the language that you're trying to learn, that could be very interesting, very compelling. Why don't you, when you write your master's thesis, if that's the track you're taking through the program, use your background in radio drama and suggest, dramas that might be useful for teaching particular target languages.
It is in my mind, that's for sure. Mark, John was talking specifically about sounds and how we use familiar sounds to sort of paint pictures in our heads and stuff like that. My buddy and a friend, Lothar Tuppen, turned me on to infrasound. And there's a whole aspect of sound that isn't familiar, but can set people's mood on a subconscious level. Can you talk a little bit about some of that? Because I know you've worked so much with sound, you must be engaging in that a lot too.
Yeah, it also overlaps into music. And so a lot of those ideas I tend to bring in for approach and so forth. I know it's very interesting that you mentioned this. It's an interesting one, I think. There is this Brazilian group called Wakchi, U-I. And I was exposed to these guys back in the mid-80s. They make their own instruments. Everything. And there are a couple of things that are of Western origin that we would identify, like a violin, maybe, but it's been modified in some way. But everything else is manufactured. And so consequently, they produce melodic music that gives a different reaction in the human body. It's very interesting because you can't quite pinpoint what that sound truly is. And as a result, creates an intrigue. And a brain chemist guy I was working with in Florida back in the that was his entire research. It was all about how sound, particularly in his case, shamanic sound, healing in the brain. And he was interested in what sounds did what. How do we, what, why is doing something to the pancreas right now? Why is that, how is that happening, you know? And so he was
really interested in that.
And so consequently, as I was working with that guy, it became very clear that
certain
tonalities, particularly organic sounds, and not ones that are easily identifiable, like the low note on a piano, a harpsichord or something, but tones that are complex, that evolve time and stuff like that. You're hearing this sort of work a lot more in film and tracks. There's not a lot of busyness going on in the soundtracks anymore, unless, of course, you're watching a Marvel. But for most of the procedural stuff or dramas or things like that, you're getting these very evocative that are happening that aren't moving as much as they are propelling the emotional standpoint.
They're moving that up.
And it's very interesting in that field. And luckily, we have tools now us to sort of access some of these things. Granular synthesis is one of the things that I'm very fond of using and used in our recent War of the Worlds thing. That's an extraordinary thing because you can take literally any sound, doesn't matter what it is, and pull what they refer to as grains of audio
and manipulate it.
Tonal color, vibration of it, whether it goes
up or down
or sideways, or whatever, put it out of order, or sample it different areas very quickly so you can't tell. This is all very interesting stuff. It's a sort of evolving musical palette, but I also use it in terms of sound design because I think it just opens up worlds to create, you know, sounds that haven't really been heard.
So you say it's a tool called granular synthesis. Do you mean that it you can find plugins that would be useful for that?
Absolutely. There are a great many. One of the more interesting ones is although this particular instrument
does
more than just grain. Things pretty dense. It does a lot with granular synthesis. It's a plugin made by a company called Spectrasonics, and it's called Omnisphere. This is a big chunky program. But it allows you to do all sorts of things, not only with this, but your own sounds into it. In the logic world, if there are folks out there playing Alchemy, which is a stock plugin, it comes with the platform. That has some granular stuff in it.
It's fun to play with.
There, you're seeing this technique, employed by
a lot of companies. I think
Pateria also uses it. Native Instruments has a bunch of them. So they're all terribly expensive. I mean, some are kind of lofty and spendy, but a few are just very affordable. And
it's a good place to
just and fool around, see what you can come up with.
Now, those are mostly used in the studio afterwards. It's hard to do those live for the live shows, correct?
No, we've actually done lives. I'll tell you a good example of it. We did a, this was for another company. This was a company called Film Music. Music did was they took pre-existing films, stripped out all the soundtrack, played music to the screen, and rebuilt live the entire soundtrack as it was happening.
Wow.
Very ambitious. So naturally, one of their first projects was Gamera. So I had to come up with ways of making the sound of a giant turtle come out of the actors on the stage
whenever they
wanted that. So we rigged up some wireless headsets and ran it through a bunch of actors and some granular stuff, and it actually worked. And within the program that I tend to use in the live setting, it's something called Ableton Live. It works really well in there.
It's very sophisticated
application, and you can get away with
using some pretty
heavy art live setting if you're of the mind.
very cool. John, maybe you can talk a little bit about the difference I've mentioned earlier of of the cycle, specifically with Reimagined Radio, when you're, how different is it to be operating between live shows and recorded shows? In like, what's the cycle like in a pre-production, production, post-production cycle for you guys? What's it like to create a show for Reimagined Radio?
Well, I have to say first off that, and Mark has been very instrumental in changing my mind on this, that it's actually much more pleasant working in the studio than working to try to get something to the stage. So working for a produced recording episode that can be broadcast or streamed live or on demand certainly has challenges. I mean, there are production challenges and timing challenges and resource challenges, but it's much more manageable than a herd of cats that, you know, acting troops tend to be. And finding a venue that's available and arranging for promotion and getting enough rehearsal time. Mark and I think, are agreeing to collaborate on each episode for the purpose of creating new worlds and ways to be in them using sounds. And that's certainly a lot easier and a lot more productive when you've got, quote, total control, you know, over the production. When you're, I mean, even being in a vintage movie theater, it's great. I mean, the panache of the whole thing is wonderful, but anything can go wrong. I mean, we had one episode where one of the characters during an intermission rapidly got himself inebriated in the bar on the second story of the theater, and when it came back to the second part, he finished his line and jumped off the stage. And you don't know when these sort of things are going to happen, and you don't have any control over them, and it's just a lot of stress that it's nice, honestly, not to have to deal with that sort of creative challenge by working in the studio. Just to finish that thought, I'm enjoying very much not working for live performance just now. And the COVID pivot, of course, makes that pretty much necessary. So it's easy to accept the challenges and actually revel in them. But I do, in the back of my mind, have the thought that it would be very nice to offer live performances once again. But were I to do that, I would do it a lot differently. I'd have a dedicated ensemble of voice actors and sound artists, Foley artists, musicians, other people that, and notice right away, I'm just, you know, getting impossibly big in terms of how to finance all this. But, you know, a group of people that would be dedicated the same way I am to make sure that we can provide the best possible performance. And then I think it would be great to have a series of performances. But to speak about the process, I'm sorry. In either case, whether it's a live performance or a recorded performance, I always start thinking about the audience. Who's going to be listening to this? Who's the primary audience? And what do I know about that audience? And what do I know about subjects that they're knowledgeable about and interested in, and how can I extrapolate from that to be able to offer perhaps a radio drama that they are unfamiliar with but might like to know about because it touches on areas of their own listening experience and interests. So detective crime sort of dramas from the 30s through the 50s, of course, are still very popular, and there are several that are very well known, and we've done The Maltese Falcon, and it's done, you know, very nicely. But it's also fun to take a look at some of the lesser known detective type stories, for example, Candy Matson, the best of the female detectives.
She's coming up.
And yeah, that's going to be our next episode in November. It's as part of the process. Also, I think it's very interesting to try to shift the roles, gender roles. So, for example, in The War of the Worlds, Professor Pearson played for 82 years by a male character. It was really interesting and exciting and satisfying to say, why couldn't that be a woman? You know, a woman can be an astronomer just as easily as a man can be an expert, a scientist, and, you know, be able to keep her head and wits about her while the world is devolving into chaos as Martian machines tramp around.
Yeah, the actress did a wonderful job, too.
She did a great job, and that's kudos to Mark. You know, Mark's well-connected with a community of voice actors that are looking for opportunities like Reimagined Radio is trying to provide. So it's the start of, I think, a really productive relationship, and it's been working well pretty much from a distance. I produce the script and then the actors interpret the script. We got lots of readings that weren't on the script pages that really worked, that, you know, we were able to add last minute simply because it sounded so great, you know, asides and off-the-cuff remarks, off-microphone remarks, all of which added to a sense of being in a world and experiencing that world through sound. So research, background considerations, determining what resources are available, including people, timing, what do we have in hand, what do we need to get. All of this has to do with planning the scheduling, and then we pick a topic that we're going to work with and begin a process of continual discussion, I think, continually circling around the subject. I liken it actually to using a spiral staircase where you go up and down, you're constantly going over the same territory, but each time from a different perspective. And Mark and I meet regularly and talk about the project underway. We always come up with a new idea. We're, you know, willing to experiment with it right up to the last minute. So the shows or episodes are constantly evolving. So maybe controlled chaos is a way to summarize.
Pretty typical, isn't it?
I've heard people, I've talked to a lot of people who've done live radio drama, and I'm always interested in producing it. And I get a little panicky when I think about what an audience watching has expectations for compared to one just listening on their own, and if there is a different kind of expectation that can come. And I've been told that comedies work really well, and it's hard to stray too much from a comedic background, even taking a serious subject and not adding comedy in it for a live show. Have you found that's an issue?
You know, I've found that people that have come to talk to me about being in the audience in a live Reimagined Radio performance, a lot of them say, I'm here to watch the Foley work. I want to see how the sound effects are produced. You know, I want to see what improbable thing somebody's going to use to make a sound of a head being wrenched off a body, or, you know, whatever the sound effect is. And I think also they enjoy watching the actors interact with each other. You know, it's not rehearsed movements. It's not staged. The acting, I mean, we have chairs on the back of the stage, and the actors sit there, and then when their lines come, they walk up front to the microphone. And so how the characters move and that sort of thing. And research suggests to me that radio dramas produced live on radio were pretty much a one-and-done experience, and people had their scripts in hand, and as they finished a page, they would simply drop that page to the floor. So we tried that in a couple of productions of Reimagined Radio. The stage was littered with pieces of paper. But so many people came up to me after the performance and said, really liked that touch, throwing down the script and the materiality of the performance, and you're done with the script and you're on to the next thing. The drama is continually unfolding. It's just out of sight over the sonic horizon, I guess, to try to make a metaphor out of that. So those visual elements are quite exciting to the audience, but at the same time, it's all about listening.
Cool. Mark, you wear another hat that I didn't know about, and that is that of casting. So how different is that for you? Like, what kind of things do you look for when you're trying to cast a particular particular show? Because I know for myself, a variety of voices is very important for people to identify different characters. So do you have like stock ideas in your head, or how do you work with that?
Yeah, I think a good example of this, the next thing we're going to be working on, I like to get from the writer, who are they, who, but what sort of voice when they're writing this? Because I want to do as much honor character in the writer's head as humanly possible. And that usually opens up all sorts of, you know, soundalikes and stuff like that. Or as in the one we're just doing, this Tversky thing, it's based on real people. There's in existence per se, but there's a type, texture, or a cadence to a character. And it's like, all right, who is best suited for this? Because we've got quite a rogues gallery here of people, you know, incredibly talented and can fit a variety of things. So it's just matching the right thing, matching the right person to the right vocal texture. And then it's, you know, the thing to bear in mind, and you, Jack, you've heard as I have, even in well-known productions where you have people's voices that are so similar, you're not sure exactly who delivered that last line unless they're saying their name every 2 or 3 seconds. You know, and that gets very... But if you plan ahead and, you know, probably try to match the voice character to the character involved, the texture of the character involved, you're really going to have a much more reference between people. And so that's a big consideration. Many people, I know, most of my introduction to talent out here came from a relationship with Sam Mowry, who is an incredible voice talent out here. And he introduced me to this.
Yeah, a couple of shows of mine as well.
Of course, he's just he's just a prince of a guy, as they say. But he has amazing people that he's worked with over the years, and we have supplemented each other's sort of category and or of a catalog of voice talent out here. So it's quite a group of people who are just very gifted and get it, you know, because that's really important. You do have to, first of all, you have to like what you're reading. You know, that's kind of, that helps. A lot of actors can blow past that, like it anyway, but I prefer if they have an attachment to it. It just, it plays better. So once you have that established, makes things move along wonderfully well. And like Pat, I heard Pat, Professor Pearson, in this production of War of the Worlds, I heard her voice the moment I read John's adaptation. Larry, who played Phillips in this thing, I heard immediately. They were screaming off the page to me. And it was just a matter of whether Larry could actually do it,
because his schedule is a little...
Pat, I just presumed this would be something she'd be up for. And luckily for us, she was. So...
That's great. Just one more extra thing, a little on a side. I noticed that you are a 3-time Emmy Award-winning sound designer. Congratulations. I can honestly say I don't know anyone who has that kind of honor. What were the projects that you worked on that got you there?
This is fun thing. And it was so unlike anything I would normally be involved in. I designed sound and actually played a character in an NBC series for television,
daytime television,
called Shamu TV, which was, I think that series ran for maybe 3, 4, or 5
Emmys.
Must have daytime Emmys. And so I was grateful to that company. So it, the two of them came from that show. The other one came from
another
wild associated thing for a guy named Jack Hanna. Jack Hanna is I don't know if he's still a wild world of whatever. He travel around and, you know, introduce exotic species to you. And this was just one show that was about, I believe it was about primates. No, I'm sorry. It was about, it's been a while. It was about predators. That's what it was. And because normally they use a lot of library music in shows like that. And they didn't this time. And I'm to do some stuff in there that I'd like to do. But yeah, so those are great experiences.
And,
I'm very pleased and delighted to be, you know, a recipient of that. So.
Well, congratulations again. John, I've been struggling to try to get people to use the moniker audio drama for some years now, collectively, so that we can all do it. I've seen people utilize a number of different ones. I have no problem with radio drama, too, of course. I just use audio drama because sometimes it's off the radio. But I've seen people start to use things like audio fiction or fiction podcasts or something like that. And I've struggled to try to explain to people that fiction and drama are two different animals. Am I wrong in doing that?
No, I don't think so, Jack. I think a work of drama has a different context and oftentimes a different direction that it might take over a work of literary fiction. Of course, there can be drama in fiction, but drama, especially as we might consider it on a stage type performance, seems to me to be a conscious effort to present dramatic situations to you know, to a viewing audience, and that to me makes it a separate or it makes a solid differentiation, I think, between other literary forms or sonic events that we might consider.
Yeah.
It's actually it's interesting that you asked the question. I was hoping that you wouldn't, because I didn't want to have to provide a definition of anything. It's a very academic endeavor, I think, to want to define terms, because once you've defined a term, then you have control over that thing, because it's in a place, it's in a box, it's in a pigeonhole, it's in a category, it's in a folder, it's on a certain part of the shelf, you know, whatever organizational structure you might be thinking about. It to me is a bit more appealing to think of sound as being a very fluid medium that can leak through boundaries very easily and provide amazing resources and influences in storytelling, as it might happen in different forms. So for that reason, I always think of and speak of Reimagined Radio as being about an exploration of radio storytelling, you know, using the radio, using the features and affordances of radio for telling stories. And that in itself is a very leaky sort of definition, because I think it means that you're arguing that radio itself, the medium, the technology, the the ecology of radio is an art form as well, which that idea appeals to me. So it works really well in this context.
I think you're right. I think that story is permeable, and you can't have too many hard and fast rules and walls about it. I was always struggling because it's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about, and a lot of people mistake. So I know lots of people that hate audiobooks, despise audiobooks, but love radio drama. And so any misunderstandings of stuff like that, or vice versa, to be quite honest, could just sort of, in my opinion, can make it much more difficult for people to find us in the first place.
And absolutely. So, but a lot of that dislike might just not be dislike of the content, but rather dislike of the media. I mean, a person who doesn't like an audio book may be someone who really likes the tactile experience with a book, a physical thing, bound pages, perfect spine, you know, gilded lettering, slick paper, whatever might be the physical affordances of the book, the ability to open and close it, smell the paper, smell the ink, turn the pages. None of those features and affordances are available the same way through an audiobook, even though there are attempts to reproduce those sonically. I mean, we can have the sound of turning pages and that sort of thing. But those people might just be reacting to what they think a book should be and how the experience to the book should be based on physical features and affordances. We're really lucky to be working in a field of sound and sound possibilities, because, I mean, sound is what? The most ephemeral of all media. As soon as I finish speaking, my words are gone, and, you know, unless they're recorded in some way. So trying to present an ephemeral experience in a way that will make a lasting impression is a worthy challenge, I think.
I think that is too. I know, too, when I try to talk about differences, I find fiction and audio, and I have no problem with audiobooks. I listen to them all the time myself, so this is not me who's saying it. I'm not placing myself in that way. I just know friends. But I know that books have a tendency of once upon a time where this has happened, whereas a lot of radio drama is immediate. You're placed into the moment, right? That's the aspect of drama, of stage, is the immediacy of that particular element. And I've always found that really compelling, because you're suddenly that third person sitting on the stage, almost like listening to what's going on or watching, experiencing what's going on, rather than being told a story too. And I try to identify those as markers. And again, you know, you've got crossover all the time, especially with detective stories, right? So,
but the point still isn't to create a world that's believable enough so that the audience, reader, participant, whatever we want to call the consumer of this, let's just call it a drama, since that seems to be what we're talking about, is going to believe that he or she can actually be engaged in the action and can see themselves in their imagination as the protagonist and see themselves taking meaningful actions as the story unfolds. Now, that's not necessarily native or solely a property of radio drama or any other kind of sound-based storytelling. I mean, a well-written book will transport you into another world, you know, just as easily. We could argue that's a prototype of virtual reality. Movies and visual situations can also make us believe that we're there. I mean, the first time I saw the Alien movie, I was totally discombobulated as I walked out of the movie theater, I had no idea even what city or state I was in. And I was really glad that it was daylight.
Yeah. You
know, when I walked out of the movie theater. No, so I have been very engaged in that.
Me too. I love the fact that they also never told the actors about the whole scene of the alien ripping out of the guy's chest, that they just let the honest reactions of what was going on experience throughout that. That would have been terrifying to be an actor in that situation as well. Sadly, we're running out of time.
You can do that in radio as well. I mean, yes. We do have to, I think, provide some guidelines for the listener. I mean, Mark mentioned it earlier. We often have to name the person we're speaking to just so the audience will know what's happening with regard to the conversation. And we also maybe have to provide clues about action. Oh, look, here comes John. He'll have an answer for us. Or, ooh, the aliens are coming down, you know, the river, whatever. But if the sound is engaging enough, and Mark, I think, speaks nicely to this, that the voice differentiation between the characters, the audience is going to figure that out. The audience is going to make their own markers, their own connections, and they're going to then be part of the story. And whether they're just going along like a fly on the wall observing, or they're going along as one of the adventurers, you know, in this story, that's okay. They're going along. They're part of the story, and they're engaged, and that's what Reimagined Radio is looking for.
And so what can people look forward to for Reimagined Radio coming up and into 2022?
Oh, boy. We're talking about all sorts of interesting things. Candy Matson Tribute, I've already spoken about that. That's be our November episode. Since 2013, Reimagined Radio has performed some adaptation of The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, and that has become a community tradition. I'd like to break with that somewhat this year, and rather than yet another iteration of The Christmas Carol, I'm proposing and working with Mark to produce what right now has got a working title of a holiday Christmas sampler. So I'm actually trying to draw from various classic OTR radio programs like the Damon Runyon Theater, Jack Benny, Rocky Fortune, Vic and Sade, and pulling out bits and pieces of radio, even Christmas episodes from those series, and stitch them together around the theme of, you know, what are the holidays all about? What sort of things do we want to do? So Christmas cards. Well, Vic and Sade have a really interesting episode about that. Mark has mentioned Figursky. It's actually Figursky at Findhorn on Acid will be our January production. That'll be a ground. Actually, we're starting below ground. This is an adaptation of a pioneering work of hypertext fiction, fiction never produced for print, to be read on a computer by clicking hyperlinks to navigate multiple ways through the story. So I've come up with one storyline that puts all three characters and the two artifacts, main artifacts of the story, in one place at the same time, and then we have them play out their craziness. Wow. So that's going to be that. We're talking about the fall of the city, partnering with the Willamette Radio Workshop, and music and sound effects specifically produced by Mark for that episode. I've got a William Conrad tribute, The Abominable Snowman.
Listened to that, the Escape episode.
Yes.
Right? That was fantastic. Wow. Yeah.
We want to do that along with Bloody Hands from Gunsmoke, where Matt Dillon retires. Only for a few hours because he can't. You know, there's nobody left to defend Dodge City if he's
and he's under contract, so he has to come back.
Yes,
that's right. I love William Conrad. What a talent he was. Fantastic.
Yes, and a great voice. I mean, a tribute just to that voice is worthwhile.
Voice was amazing. I recommend, by the way, speaking of Westerns, the Six Shooter Christmas one, where is a great variety. I don't know if you've heard it. It's a great variation on Christmas Carol. A beautifully, beautifully well done one.
Wow. Where
a kid sort of runs away and he goes and tells this kid the story to try to bring him back home around Christmas time. And he utilizes the Christmas Carol in a very inventive way. So that would be an interesting one to do in the future if you're interested.
It would be, absolutely. We could have Christmas every month that way. Mark's
it would
got
be for me if you did that. I would Christmas every month for me.
Yeah. Mark has got some interesting ideas for upcoming episodes as well, based on feedback from the voice actors that he's been working with. So, Mark, throw out your ideas.
Yeah, we have as a result of this War of the Worlds thing, a lot of people have come forward and suggested, no, this idea, since you're celebrities with one of the oldest shows ever, here, I got some idea. And a couple of these folks, one guy in particular, on Fusebox, had the brash and unforgivable notion to say, you know, since this War of the Worlds thing is a seasonal thing, and rightly so, it should be, regardless what version you should do it, right? To tackle it completely over and just rewrite it from the ground up, throw up stuff and just, you know, start from scratch. We'll see. I've asked a bunch of people to send me treatments of what their ideas are. Some of these stories will be short. They won't be hour long things. They'll be very short, but we'll do, you know, kind of an anthological thing. We have plans. I don't know how it's going to depend on some hardware, but we have some plans to do sort of an interdimensional lifestyle and food show, where we're going to take you to a very different place, and we're going to cultures that live there, the foods they make, the animals that live there, the people who play instruments, all sorts of weird things. This borrows on a concept that Gerald and I came up with in 1975, called Tales of Farwan, and we've been working on this thing for a lot of years. So, if you're interested in that, go to encernet.com, encernet.com, media.com, and they can see what we're talking about. But that's going to be one. But like I say, that's going to require a little front end. But it might make the cut. But in any case, lots more spoken word fun and game adaptation, things like that coming down.
And we've got a script submitted by Jack Ward.
Absolutely.
In the mix.
I didn't know if you wanted to mention that or not at this point.
I actually really enjoyed it.
No, yeah, it's great, Jack. We appreciate it.
You finished it? Oh, good.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we'll have to chat. So that's good. Is it something that you guys might be interested in doing at some point? Would it fit your schedule?
Yeah, because it didn't go anywhere where I thought it was going to go. And it's since the POV is sort of, it's being relayed to us through news organizations and stuff. I really like the whole premise of it. So, yeah, we'll see, you know.
There's an opportunity for different voices from different locations, each of which would have a unique sonic envelope and ambience associated with it that could be really fun to play with regard to an episode of Reimagined Radio. It's chunky, which, you know, we need to do because right now we're broadcasting on community radio and we have to include sponsor spots. So we can't have an uninterrupted story. So something that can chunk nicely without losing interest while we listen, you know, to cannabis ads and that sort of thing coming on the community radio station.
As you do, we, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're the oddly enough the founding sponsor, so they have to appear in every program.
And it's never been produced before, so I'm thrilled about that idea. Because well, every time I try it, I've never been able to get enough people together to do the right thing for it. Oh, so
yeah, that's cool. Always.
Well, when we do it, you'll be one of the people that we'll contact. You can be a voice in your drama.
That is very kind of you. Thank you so much. And this wasn't supposed to be about me, but I appreciate it. That's awesome. It's so good to talk to both of you. We've already hit an hour, and I feel like I just scratched the surface. So we're going to have you come back at some point, and we'll talk some more about some of the new things that you guys are going to be doing in the future. Thank you so much, John. Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to see you both. I know both of you are now engaged in Mutual Audio Network, so we're going to see a lot more of Reimagined Radio through that, which is fantastic. I'm so excited.
Very happy to be there. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for the invitation for this conversation today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. And and for anybody who knows, if we get this out in time, just I guess in a week's time, we're going to be releasing on the Sonic Society your War of the Worlds for Halloween Day, which is going to be amazing on Sunday Showcase. So that's going to be very cool as well. Lots of fun stuff to come. And I can't wait to hear your Candy Matson. I'm already excited to hear what's coming up next. Thanks so much, gents.
Thank you, Jack. It's been a pleasure and an honor. Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Bye.
Hello, I'm John Bell of Bells in the Battery, along with my associates, Arnie Kunchbar.
I can introduce myself, thank you very much.
All right.
Hi, I'm Arnie Kunchbar.
That's it?
That's it.
And also, do you want me to introduce you, Brad?
Well, of course, Mr. Bell, that's your job as host.
Thank you, Brad. And I'd like to introduce Brad.
Hold it.
What?
Here's your script.
Script?
Well, you gotta know what to say.
All right. And introducing Brad Montworth, a salesman, incomparable public relations expert, and, of course, unrivaled attorney at law.
No, come on, you know how to say it, Mr. Bell.
Unrivaled attorney at law.
Oh, Mr. Bell, you shouldn't say those things. You make me blush.
Can I do my introduction over again?
No. We're here for an important reason.
Very important.
Indeed.
If you think you deserve significant financial compensation, call Brad Motworth, attorney at law.
Oh, boy.
At 555-4...
No. We're here to remind everybody to take steps to avoid the coronavirus.
Yeah, don't catch it, because there's no one you can sue.
Wash your hands thoroughly and keep social distancing.
What?
Social distancing.
One more time.
Stay about 6 feet away from everybody else.
Right, very good.
Oh, I gotta wash my hands thoroughly. I don't want to get me this corona.
Ooh, keep your distance now. Socially. I want to keep feeling fine, corona.
Never gonna stop getting squirts from my Purell.
I'm always gonna buy all the toilet paper that they sell.
Bye. Bye, Corona!
Bye, Corona!
Don't get no closer, huh? Beat it, huh? Far enough where I can't see your eyes, Corona!
An illness history is not for me, Don't wanna try your COVID on for size, Corona!
Never gonna touch, stay away! My epidermis never wants to be close to where that nasty germ is!
Bye, woo!
Bye, Corona!
Captain
Bye,
Corona! What? Pumpkin Pie, Corona!
Now, wait a minute!
Emerald Rye, Corona!
Guys!
Goodbye, Corona! Good riddance.